Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake, a day where there is snow impending. Mm-hmm. This is one of our Saturday recording shows. So outside,
is it impending or just pending?
I think if it's rain, it's pending. But if it's snow, because snow, impending. It's impending. Because people get snowed in or crash their car or
distinctions in words.
Yeah, because again, when you look out to the lake from the basement studios, it was all sunny and now it's all great.
No, this morning it looked quite nice.
Talking of snow, we did cover.
Yeah, we're in midst Olympics.
Have you been watching the Olympics?
Yeah, a bit. So the first weekend, I was like, oh, this is bad. This is too much. The curling is not enough to keep me intrigued, and it just seemed to be wandering, but they hadn't really started the skiing yet. And then the past week has been almost every evening when you get home, there's a full-blown like metal skiing event on, which I've enjoyed.
I have enjoyed the skiing, although, and I don't want to replow old ground because we did do a special a couple of shows ago, so go back and listen to our Olympic, not special.
That's right, just Olympic.
And I was shocked when you'd pointed out that there are only 15 sports. But it is amazing when you watch the Olympics, and the TV's on, I vaguely pay attention because so many of these things are judged. I'm just looking for someone to fall over because then it's nice and clear in my mind. I'm like, wow, yeah, all these sports are kind of variants of the same thing. Yeah. Which I guess is an unfair criticism, because if you go to the Olympics, everyone's running. You know,
it's all variants on running.
Yeah, so I've been watching it. It does. I do feel, and I know this is the modern Olympic television experience. So I put those words together because that's my point here. It does feel like there is either an inordinate amount of coverage of figure skating, whether it be the actual figure skating itself. Mm-hmm. But there seems to be long segments of experts sitting around talking about the figure skating. And this is my problem, not everyone else's. I continually underestimate, misestimate, or just don't get how popular.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, it's not like, oh, they're ignoring the fact that people don't like it. The truth is, it draws the biggest ratings, right? Like, so you can't be, you know.
It does, yeah.
What I think they're doing better with than they have in years gone by is less junk, less personal interest. We're going to spend 20 minutes.
That's
no offense
very
to Mary Carrillo.
That's very true.
Mary Carrillo does a lot of regular stuff, too, but she always seems to have those stories. But, you know, and there seems a lot less of that.
I think after 20 years, they finally heard, we like background. But everyone needs to be overcoming
something. What little moments of figure skating I've seen, the announcers are better than they used to be. Like, it's that, it's Johnny Weir and
Tara Lipinski.
I think they're better.
Yeah, it's all just treated. Although, like I say, there was a moment last night, because again, here in America, it's on multiple channels. So I was flipping from channel to channel to stay on whatever I can put up with. And I quickly flipped channels and the figure skating was on. And there's a guy out in the ice. And I swear to God, my very first thought was, oh, he's competing in what looks like a Robin Hood outfit. And at that moment, I then clicked the next channel. Because at that moment, sports, one should not be competing in sports in a Robin Hood outfit.
All right. That's all I'm saying. Don't want to get, people can go back to that episode. They don't need to listen to that episode again today.
No, we're not.
But you had something you wanted to talk about. So last night,
I'm going to put the boot in now.
The winner of the women's GS, or the way the women's GS being giant slalom ski.
No, it was Super G.
Oh, Super G.
Super G. Which I've said I like because I don't know what it
bigger,
is, but it's cool.
Bigger turns. It's between like the it's the size of the turns.
Oh, well, yeah,
it's super downhill where in theory it's open. It's tough on this course to see exactly the difference between Super G and slalom, and downhill. But there's a few more turns.
So
anyway, Lindsey Vonn, who is a big American, she ends up coming in sixth. She was the first.
Not just a big American. I think I get a sense from looking at the internet. And I think there is a danger with the Olympics that whatever country you're in, you do watch it through that very sort of myopic, how is my country doing? But I do think someone like Lindsey Vonn, obviously she is of great interest here in America, Vonn, but you know something? I think she is one of the legitimate stars of the sport.
She's been, you know, on the circuit. She's been a champion for many years, top
So she doesn't win, and the event is won by a snowboarder who borrows... I keep calling her a skateboarder when
her
I show up.
Her name's Esther Ledecker.
Who borrowed Michaela's Schifrin skis, went down the hill and won the whole thing. And at that moment when I read that, I'm like, yeah, this is all BS.
Okay.
It is.
Anything
I'm
else
sorry.
You want to say?
Well, no, and I'm just going to say...
I'm setting you up here, all
right? You're setting me up. If... my position with a lot of this stuff has always been that, well, I'm not kind of sure how sporty it is in terms of the Olympics in general, and I'm not knocking the athletic ability of any of these people. And again, I don't ski. When it snows, I stay indoors because, as far as I'm concerned, snow is something that impends upon us. Rather than something I'm going, great, I can get outside. At the end of the day, this is vaguely the equivalent of me showing up at the Masters, borrowing someone else's clubs and winning the thing. Then, you know, at that moment, I actually don't want to hear about how great Tiger Woods or Jordan Spieth or any of these guys are. That's my feeling. So the woman's like, yo, it's a snow. She's at the Olympics to be in another event. She shows up and she wins this event, borrowing someone else's equipment. What does that say about this event?
Here's what this story actually says, is that Zeff is a very bad consumer of news information, because... That makes it sound like the version you said with the golfing.
Yes,
that is not at all what occurred. This woman Esther Ledecky is a surprise winner, but she's the 43rd ranked Super G skier in the world. She tours. She's on the World Cup tour. She just happens to do two sports. She's a grand champ, you know, she's world champion snowboarding.
Yeah, and I respect
that. She has not been a world champion skiing, but it's not like she doesn't ski. She didn't just pop on over to the hill and put it. She was in the event. And the reason that she was borrowing Michaela Schifrin's skis isn't because she didn't have skis. It's because Michaela Schifrin decided not to run and has a very nice set of skis. And she said, I'll use those skis instead of my regular skis.
I don't know why
skis.
Michaela Schifrin decided not to run, because from the sound of it, she should have gone down. She would have won the event.
Well, it's probably true. But what happened is one of the earlier events for Michaela Schifrin, like one of the slalom event was supposed to be the first day and got delayed over weather. And so now her whole sketch, because she was running in basically everything. And now with the two compressed, she was ducking out of this.
I don't want to hear, if you do a winter sport, I don't want to hear that the weather's too rough for you.
No.
That's my position.
No, it's not
well.
The weather is too rough. It's that the weather was too rough to run the race.
Yeah, right.
Then the races ended up being too consolidating. She didn't do that. So yes.
To be fair.
Surprise win, but not, like, you know, but actually, I mean, there's I'm trying to give you crap, but I will say.
There's some truth in what I'm saying.
No. There's
frankly, if the dude in the Robin Hood outfit had won the skiing, I would have been more generous to
there
his
is
performance.
No, there's virtually no truth in what you're saying. What I was going to say is, this is the problem, like, with the Olympics and the way they tell stories. Because you go to the Guardian, right? Because just before this, you told me the thing about the sharing skis.
Yeah.
And I'm like, or borrowing skis. And I'm like, okay, this is weird.
You claimed it was
because I had read the entire Washington Post article, which went in great depth of this race, and nowhere did they mention borrowing
skis.
They're
fake news.
You're right. Yeah. Exactly. They skipped over that because somehow that helped.
Fake news.
So I'm running searches, and two articles, The Guardian, which, by the way, I want to talk about The Guardian in a second here, but The Guardian being a British paper, whatever the heck it is now.
A broadsheet.
Yeah.
A serious paper.
And then, another website, I think CBS Sports, both had these, like, one paragraph descriptions where they talked about, oh, she borrowed these skis.
But she did.
But then you go and you had to really dig to find this, by the way. This is what took a bunch of time beforehand, where they're explaining the fact that she was borrowing the skis just because it was an option of doing a different pair of skis. She had her own skis. Michaela Schifrin wasn't running, and so I'll run with these skis. It does make you wonder whether the skis are amazing or what's going on.
But that's my point, though.
That isn't your point. Your point was that she dabbled in it. She doesn't dabble in it. She's a touring.
No, but
World
my point
Cup
is
giant slalom skier.
It's at some moment, if I'm one of the other dudes who doesn't do a second sport, and I've been
this
beaten
is,
by
this
a snowboarder,
like
didn't
story
even know what
told.
Equipment
this
she
is,
should
this
use.
This is like a story.
Then it says something
this
about
is like,
the sport.
Like a story about the 43rd ranked golfer in the world somehow winning the Masters. That's not all that shocking, right? It'd be a surprise, but it's not that shocking.
It's like a dude showing up and balling and grabbing the racket and then beating Roger Federer.
No, it's totally not. So it's like the 43rd ranker of golf in the world comes there and he goes, you know what? So-and-so, you know, Tiger's got these great set of clubs he got from Nike, specially designed. I'm going to go ahead and use those in this thing, and then they win the Masters, and you'd be like, "Oh, that's a surprising story," but it doesn't invalidate the sport of golf.
That does a little bit,
anyway. So,
so congratulations to her. There you go.
Well, I mean, and she basically seemed to say after this, because she's been developing her skiing. She hasn't been doing it for very long, 2 years, I think, of being on the cup circuit or something like that.
Yeah.
But she was basically saying, I'm probably going to spend more time on my skiing now.
Well,
which is kind of weird, because we were basically saying there's more. I was talking to somebody recently about how the snowboarders, particularly not the snowboard racers, but the half pipe people, they'd lose, or they're just like, what the heck? And I was like, you know why they're what the heck? Because this means almost nothing to them. You know, they probably make more money, because a snowboarder who does half pipe, Sean White or whatever, has so many endorsement deals, like way beyond anybody other than
sucked it all up, isn't he?
Well, not just him, but I think all these people, because they appeal to a youth culture, I'm certain that everybody who's the snowboard, those top snowboarders, have a deal with like a shoe place or a clothing earbuds, all these sort of stuff that, if you are into that stuff, you would know about. Whereas I'm going to guess that the 43rd rank, but for her being a snowboarder, the 43rd rank World Cup skier,
she's not
drawing a bunch of things, because there aren't a bunch of kids like following that work. Yeah. A bunch of kids are following the half pipe stuff.
That's
enough Olympics.
That's enough Olympics. Yeah.
Yeah. So our next.
Plus, we're too old, because everyone in the Olympics this year seems to be 16 or 17. That's weird, right? Like, oh my God.
Either that or at least the two stories are you're really young, or you're like Lindsey Vonn and you're really old. Fifth Olympics.
Comparatively.
Yeah,
it's interesting in it. It's like, they're in their fifth Olympics.
Where's the 28 year olds?
Yeah, there's no tweeners, are there? Yeah.
I think there are. I think they're just not a story.
They're just not very good.
But even when they win, nobody is telling that piece of the story. They're just saying, the person won the Olympics, all right. So next area is medical stuff, which the first article is a quick one about bears and fish skins. So there was an article in the Post
a couple of weeks ago
by Karen Brulliard, Brulliard.
We will link it somehow.
About bears that were burned in the California wildfires on their paws, right?
Yeah.
Like, so, the problem is you got embers everywhere, and the bear may avoid the thing, but then they burn their paws on the ground, being all smoldering and like.
I did. It's funny. I don't normally pay attention to this sort of stuff. And I guess this says something about, where I am in my life, getting older. I felt really bad for the bears.
Well, sure. Why wouldn't you feel bad for the bears? Because
like, their woods are on fire.
Unless you're Stephen Colbert and you're anti-bear.
Is he? Oh.
Well, he used to always do a bit. There was a bit on the old show where he'd like be like, menace to society, bears! And he would have like a countdown of all the dangers of bears.
Walking around and he's burning his paws.
Right. So, obviously you burn your paws. That's not a good situation for recovery, because, the bears can't be like, well, I'm going to just lay in bed for like the next... I mean, they do in the winter. They'll be convenient. If you burn yourself right before you went to hibernate, then you could just lie there and let your paws recover. But if you have to get around and get food, it's not a good time. People, when they get burns, they can do skin grafts.
Right.
And so there's like synthetic versions of this. And apparently the big problem with animals when you would do this is they would pull it off. That, like if you use a plastic or something like that, bandage.
That's why you wear that. If you're a dog, that's why they give you the cone.
Exactly.
Or a cat. Like, they give you the cone, like, so you don't lick off your stitches or whatever it may be. Yeah.
Right.
And obviously you can't really get a bear and stick him in it. I guess you could stick a bear in a cone.
So what they
catch fish in it when he's standing by the river.
So this, we should give credit to the woman who was involved, Peyton. What's her, Jamie Peyton?
Yeah,
it's a woman. It's J-A-M-I-E, so it could be a guy, but no, it's a she. Okay, Jamie Peyton, who is a vet at University of California, Davis, had treated dogs, cats with burns, et cetera, so I don't think this is she didn't invent this idea, but she put tilapia skins, the fish, on their paws instead of bandages.
Which is sort of counterintuitive, which is what I first off.
Because like insert in terms of like, sanitation kind of thing?
No, and again, this is a problem whenever we do science, is that because I am of low science.
I was thinking about making a title for us, which was going to be, it was because we're going to do some more science after this, which I'm pretty sure we're going to screw up. That was basically...
Zeph does science.
No, I was going to say, Atlantic Voice screws up science.
let's remind me. I'll write that down somewhere.
The AV screws up science.
So we just said... that it's hard to treat animals because they lick or they eat their dressing.
They just pull it off, I don't think,
But have a meal. And again, I mean this deadly seriously now. It's slightly counterintuitive that bears, who are famous, they're either only... I know that the stereotype for bears is that they eat honey, but they don't eat honey. That's only cartoon bears that eat honey.
Well, they'll have honey if it's available.
But in real life, bears are probably eating either A, people, or B, they're standing around a river eating fish.
Yeah, fish.
So if you make the dressing out of fish,
you would think.
You would think. If you're the bear, you're like, oh, great.
Fish snacks.
It's fish snacks, yeah. So that was the genius behind Jamie Payton's invention or discovery here in that it's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
It's like saying, oh, I'm gonna if you tell a bear, oh, we've amputated your arm, but we're gonna give you an arm back made out of salmon, the bear is gonna re-amputate itself eating its arm.
Yeah,
because that's what they do.
So apparently it was a good success, and also like because it's organic, and you know, you could think, oh, maybe, you know, fish is not clean, but if you freshly take care of it, it's coming from inside another animal, which would be the worst thing in the world. Apparently worked very well. The bears didn't peel it off. Apparently they tried this with a mountain lion kitten. I can't say it. Mountain lion kitten. Yeah.
So you're not pronouncing
it. Did pull off the tilapia.
Really?
So, but of course it was a kitten. So
but the bear didn't.
Bear did not. Bear seemed, the line here is that Payton took to mean the bears understood the treatment helped them feel better. And I'm not going to say that. I'm just going to say, I'm going to guess that having fish skins on your paws feels more natural than bandages. And so they were probably like, oh, my paws are better, and just went on with life, you know, and weren't tempted to mess with it.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, how is it attached?
I think they just
like sort
stick
of
it on there. Like, or, you know, maybe they use a glue. Some they do have those sort of medical glues, like they stitch up, you know, when you
stick it on with honey.
Nowadays, you cut your hand, you know, they'll glue it instead of, I'm going to guess.
I guess something like that. Yeah. Who pays for all of this? That's what I want to know. The cost of health insurance in this country is through the roof, and now we're forking out on bears and giving them all sorts of things.
Sure, I mean, sort of wildlife agency or something like that.
Did she say, or was there any thought as to, was there going to be any further application to this discovery?
Well, they did.
Or is this
they
limited
did mention
to the field,
like, you know,
of bears?
There is a question as to whether, you know, they're going to experiment using animals. Maybe I just made this up in my head, but I thought there was something about, like, oh, you know, is organic material from other animals useful for people? Because, you know, for people, you get a skin graft, and you got to come up with grafts, and you got to pull them off of other parts of your skin. But if, you know, you could use fish skins instead, I'm sure that would be useful.
I did have a question, and it's now gone from my mind.
Well, you just wrote something down.
Yeah, but that was something else. That was something else. But anyway, so there you go. That was kind of... I don't know.
That's a good story. That's our quick
story. That was a quick hit science.
Yeah. I got to make sure not to close this tab so that I can send it over to you later on.
All right, let's get over to
next
drones.
Story. So this... No. We have the big science story.
Oh, we're doing that one now.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes sense because...
This is the science
it's all about,
segue.
Yeah. Okay.
The AV screws up science.
Yeah. Do you want to leave?
So because this is, you know, a lot of times we have these stories. Oh, we read this thing in an article, and we do end up reading things here. But this was originally presented to me by a colleague at my office. Shout out to Stephanie.
And if you're sitting out there right now going, "Oh, science," let me tell you something. That's normally my reaction, but because I watch a lot of TV, I did find this story very interesting.
Yeah.
And as people know, I'm not really a scientist. I'm not a scientist.
You watch TV.
Yeah, because I watch TV.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of levels to this that we might end up talking about. But
yep.
So the story is presented to me that says, you know, this coworker's mother did one of these, I forget which company, 23andMe, or one of these genetic testing things where you can test your genetics at home and send them in, and they'll tell you, oh, you know, you come from this kind of ethnic stock, this areas of the country.
So it's
I think nowadays they even like check for medical issues.
It's an offshoot of this sort of, because I have seen this advertised on TV a lot, this sort of, hey, figure out your family tree. So it is sort of related to
that. Like, Ancestry.com puts out a genetic test kit.
Yes.
And I actually was going to do this, and we should do it at some point, but the different companies, their tests are not all identical, and they all kind of cover different things. Some are more into the medical. Ancestry, if you consent to it, will anonymously put that information to a database and let you know if anybody else puts something up that looks very similar to such that you might be related to these people. Like, they might be second cousins or something like that you don't know about.
I had a turkey bacon and egg sandwich followed by a donut this morning.
Okay.
I think I'm related to Elvis Presley.
He wouldn't have had turkey.
No, that's true, yeah. That was the healthy bacon alternative,
exactly,
yeah.
He would have double bacon and whatever. Anyway, so this colleague's mother has the test results come back. And she says, clearly this testing company is bogus because it's not my information. I mean, she knows enough about her parents' background and the like to say, okay, that's not my information. So they look into it further, and I think they knew a little bit about this beforehand but had not thought about it. And so this woman had had a bone marrow transplant from her daughter. And it turns out that when you do that, you know, if you certain types of bone marrow transplants where you literally replace, and the point is the bone marrow creates red blood cells in your blood. When you do that, you now have other people's genetics in your body.
Yeah.
And so they produce blood cells that replicate those genetics. And then saliva is a mixture of different types of genetic material, and it can include stuff that came out of your blood. So it turns out that the test had revealed her daughter's genetics. And so they looked at it. And so, you know, now her daughter's gotten a freebie DNA test that she can look at her own results, but it's not actually the woman's
results. It's not hers.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was clearly her daughter's. It wasn't some sort of mishmash that didn't make sense to anyone.
Right. And that's what interesting. They must peel out. They must know they have a particular strand rather than just a mash or whatever it is. Or so this is a phenomenon called being a chimera.
Yeah.
So chimera, like it's based on.
Originally, it's Greek. Yeah, it's Greek mythology, and it's basically one of those animals that's made up of two animals. So you see those old Greek things, and it's
Wikipedia
like
page.
It's like a goat with, you know, the head of a mountain lion on it, or, you know, goat.
It's actually specific. It's
Greek head on a giraffe.
It's a fire-breathing female monster with a lion's head, a goat's body, and a serpent's tail.
Yeah, something to do with a goat.
I always thought, as generically,
but it's sort of moved out into popular fiction, literary fiction, that basically any time, you know, like you're combining, you know, like a whale with a elephant's head.
Yeah, well, it's in biology. Yeah. It's a fixed combination for any animals with mixed genetic material tissues. And apparently, like, there's a number of, we can talk about the animals if we get to it, but there's a number of unique versions in the animal world.
Breakfast was a chimera of products.
Yeah.
A donut, and then
I don't think the genetic material was mixed, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway.
So this, what they call this is acquired chimerism, because you weren't a chimera to start with, but because of something you did medically, you end up with that.
Yeah, that's what was interesting.
Apparently, there's a lesser version to some extent, although I don't think it affects people's genetics, but like in mothers, when they have a child, the child has different genetics, and because of the interflow of blood, kind of can leave behind some of the genetics of a child in a mother, but I don't think that really influences development or stuff the way.
But the chimera, and I don't want, and if you're only half listening to us mess up science, chimera, and it is chimera, isn't it? Not chimera. Chimera is the technical term, and I might be wrong now. We've led in with an example of a coworker who had done her ancestry and she'd had the bone transplant and then ended up with two different sorts of DNA. A chimera, you are born that way.
Well,
right?
No, chimeras cover anything with mixed genetic material. So,
but this, what I'm saying is people can be born that way.
Right. So this is the next thing, yes, right? So when you go to the Ark, by the way, I mean, that it's not an in-depth article, but I'll give it a shout.
We'll just bang it all up on the blog.
In part because it's this woman works in Charlottesville. It's
put it in the link. So
watersheddna.com is a woman down in Charlottesville's got a company that does genetic consulting. So if you get tests for like medical reasons or for ancestry reasons, she's Deuce Consulting. I don't know how that works. But anyway, but the article's not in depth, but it then linked out to some other articles, which links out to the more interesting one, which they call tetragametic. It's like gamine, which is genetic stuff. I think tetragametic. So chimeras, where this is, there's versions that can come from exchange, like I said, the stuff with having a kid and the like, but and I think even in children you can have, if you had twins, two versions for twins. The one version that you might expect is where the twins are in the womb and there's an exchange of blood in between, and so they end up being born with a little bit of other people's genetics in.
This
so
is
the really
how,
weird one is absorbed fraternal twins. So a fraternal twin being an identical twin, have the same genetics, so there's nothing to change. If you're a fraternal twin, you have two separate eggs and zygotes, as they say, you
right.
know, the beginning cells. Well, just like a Siamese twin is ultimately, well, actually Siamese twins are identical, so that's not a good example. In any event, sometimes those two zygotes, the little beginning cells that start a human being in the womb.
Because a Siamese twin, everyone's sharing one.
Yeah, they're the same genetics.
Whereas the fraternal twins, there are two, and people are going to have a bit of,
I mean, they're only twins in the sense that they're born the same time. They're just siblings. Just like every sibling okay. has its own right. genetic mixture of its parents, it's not identical. So these two, but you can essentially, they can go to fuse together and essentially create a person that has mixed genetics, has some genetics from one side and some genetics from the other side, where so like you have these two sets of genetics running through, and you'd almost think that wouldn't work, but apparently at that level, when you're just a zygote one cell, things kind of proceed apace, and apparently like certain organs will get one genetics, certain organs will get another genetics.
Oh, really?
You might find people who have this will have maybe two different color eyes or mixtured eyes or yeah. skin colors that mix. Like there was one of the things people will talk about had apparently like a striping to their skin with slightly different pigmentation in the two versions of the skin because they had slightly different genetics mixed together.
So basically what happens is...
It's really complicated if they're two different genders, by the way.
But... So it can exhibit itself where different parts of you have entire... And this is the thing. I would have thought that when you start blending people's stuff together, everything is a blend. But as you say, yeah, it can express itself, you know, where things can be entirely like one eye's this and the other eye's that.
Yeah, whereas, you have strands of DNA, yeah, so they don't...
That's what,
like,
was amazing.
They're combined in the first place. They're replicating themselves, but each line of DNA is busy doing the whole business of creating the human body,
yeah,
and is doing its own parts. And for just depending upon where those cells land, like, you know, if you start with two cells and they don't have any particular thing back, this relates to the other version other than marrows is stem cell transplants. Well, people do... I don't know how stem cell transplants work, but that's another one where you can trade it across. But effectively, like, you have two sets of starting cells, they have no particular purpose, but at some time as they start replicating, they start making different organs. This one's going to become the liver, this one's going to become the lungs. And if the cells that start the liver are from genetic mix A, now the liver is going to be all genetic mix A. If the cell dude is genetic mix B, then all the things are going to be genetic mix B. And so that's why you end up with different parts of you being this different parts.
And here's interesting, and this was also interesting to me, in that our bodies do not reject the foreign DNA. You hear all the time, and I know I'm now working on entirely different levels because it's my job to mess up the science.
Yeah, yeah.
You always hear about, oh, so-and-so had a heart transplant and their body that rejected it and this sort of thing. But down at that micro level, there isn't... What I'm saying is the DNA can all get in there and everything's mixing up and mixing around. It's not like we're all coded a certain way and anything that's alien code gets... You know, your body doesn't have a defense mechanism right. at a DNA level. It just takes it in and starts doing other stuff.
Yeah, in fact, there's an article in the New England Journal of Medicine about one of the people that we'll mention here in a minute. And the closing, at least in the synopsis, not the full article. You can't get full articles online because they make people pay a lot of money. But in the synopsis, they talk about the fact that this may have some important implications for organ and stem cell transplantation. Because apparently, when you have both genetics, your immune system tolerates both. So, like, you know, you would think it rejects.
Oh, so
it,
I've just hit onto something.
Because
there.
If you start with both, the body is operating with the both, and if it finds the foreign DNA, it doesn't consider it foreign. It's part of the same body.
So research will attempt to do what I've just said.
Well, you know, the theory, and this is very like, okay, maybe this would work, kind of. They don't even actually say in the articles, because I'm sure it's too much of a reach, but I think what they're implying is, if you had, like, let's say you have your own genetics, and things that would be transplanted to you might be rejected because it doesn't match. Since we can create a chimera, could you create a body that had the double genetics and then create like let's say the person donated to her mother ends up with this mixed genetics. Could now that mother take a transplant of a liver or a transplant of something that might otherwise be rejected because now the immune system is done it? Obviously, you know, like, this is 80 million steps down the road. I'm certain this falls into the category of AV messing up science. AV screwing up science, right? Isn't that what we're going to call it? The AV screwing up science. I like the alliteration.
Okay.
But That's what seems to be the implication of that article. So
the lady who created the fish bear, she needs to jump onto this next.
Exactly. Well, she's a
bear. You're done helping bears. Yeah. It's time to start helping humans.
Two of the stories that this original article links out to, one is a Wikipedia page, but I found a better article on ABC, is about parents who ran into trouble because of this issue because people didn't realize it. And one is a woman named Linda
Fairchild.
Linda Fairchild.
From Dynasty. That's what I kept thinking actually, every time I read
Lydia Fairchild.
Sorry, but I kept thinking the lady from Dynasty.
Yeah.
I don't know why. The blonde lady who
Fairchild
I don't know what her name
sounds
is.
Like a Dynasty type of.
No, Fairchild was Knots Landing. Linda was Dynasty. Or Dynasty, depending how you say it.
Yeah.
So it is a blend. It's a blend of crappy 70s soap operas.
This woman has, and I think this was in the early 2000s, maybe in the New England area, I can't remember, but
I have the article.
Has two kids.
Yep.
And is pregnant with a third. Is divorcing from the parent, the husband,
Jamie Townsend,
father, right?
Yeah.
Apparently, at that time, it was like standard procedure when you were going in for child support to prove that this person
the father,
right?
Yeah.
Like you didn't, Like nowadays, I don't think you have to get a genetic test every time. So,
I'm going to insist on one if someone's hitting me up for cash, though. Right. I'm just saying.
So they go in and they do the test and they go, "Yep, he's the father. However, you're not the mother."
Yes.
And they go, now, like, the Wikipedia article was, like, badly cited. It even has some things saying dubious citation. So
the bottom line was, he's going to pay, he's just not paying you. That was basically what the court case said.
Well, but then, the articles are talking about, Child Protective Services were then talking to her about whether she'd pulled some weird fraud.
Right.
Was there some weird surrogacy? Something had gone on oddly. According to the Wikipedia article, when the third child is born, they have somebody like witnessing it occurring to check on
what's going on.
Yeah, like to say, okay, I want to make sure this is actually her child. They tested that third child also has the wrong genetics. And of course, we've already told you the precursor. Like if you were reading the story on the news, you would just hear that story. Now they would say why. And the why is because she was a chimera.
But they didn't know that back then.
It wasn't a normal part of this sort of stuff. I mean, the thing is that she ends up getting, somehow they get tied in with somebody, another woman named Keegan, who had a similar situation, and they connect with a geneticist or somebody who is involved in that, who then goes in and tests, and they figure out that, well, genetically you could test and you could tell, well, she's her aunt, effectively, right? Because the genetics that of the unborn sibling that she had absorbed, meaning Lydia had absorbed, are now the genetics that are replicating in her cells that lead to the child. So essentially, genetically, Lydia is her daughter's aunt, or aunt, as you would say.
Right? Yeah.
So they can test that, they can show that through the genetics thing. So that, like, this is not an unrelated person. It doesn't line up as a mother-daughter thing, but it's because the genetics that are created is there. And so ultimately, my understanding is that they're still in fights over things, although I don't know, may have more to do with her relationship with the ex-husband. Similar story about who was the guy?
There was a dude who, because I have that article.
This had a Time magazine article from very recently, 2015. Where's his name? Maybe they didn't say his name. Maybe he's anonymous.
They don't. It's anonymous. But basically, the man and his partner, they were having fertility treatments and having a son. And then they found out after testing.
Oh, that's right. Right. They're not in a fight. It's just that.
He only had 10% of his son's DNA.
So they thought that
there'd been a fertility mix-up at the sperm bank.
Because they did an in vitro fertilization thing. And they thought, well, somebody mixed in the genetics. But again, they run the test and they go, well, you're your son's uncle.
Yeah.
Genetically. But so. So, like, fascinating stories. Now, we'll talk a little bit more about the science, but I want to just step back for a second on this story because one of the articles talks about this being in TV shows.
Yes, CSI.
So here's the thing about this story. This
because I'm going to hit you with a brain teaser in a moment.
Doesn't this seem like something I would know already?
We knew it, but we only knew it.
No. I mean, me personally, Eric.
why would you know?
This is the kind of stuff that I know. Like, it's the kind of stupid things I have in my head. And it's amazing to me that this story could be around for 15 years and I wouldn't have picked it up somewhere in the internet already or watching TV.
I'm really feeling
it's a personal failing on my part because this is the things, these are the things that I know about going on in the world. I'm glad now that I do know about
okay.
this. But I'm upset that I didn't already know.
Well, it's funny because I remember seeing, there's a famous episode of CSI where there's the double DNA.
I used to watch a lot of CSI.
Yeah, I know. For some reason, I believe I've sat with you watching that episode of CSI and it ends up being like the twin or whatever. And that does lead me to the brain teaser. If you're trying to commit a crime, right, obviously you want to have the shared DNA.
Right. Doesn't help you to do it with the sibling. The problem is that they're still figuring out it's you because it's your sibling's DNA and there'll be enough commonality. You really need to steal some stranger's DNA.
Well, I've also, well, that's true. You want to get hold of someone else's DNA. But in a strange way, though, I'm also trying to decide, you want to make sure, because I'm now caught up with the sperm bank and everything. You want someone else's DNA, but it also actually is helpful if they're alive. Because you don't want to just cover your own tracks. The best way to cover your own tracks is to have someone else arrested.
Right. It doesn't do any good for
that's what I'm saying.
Stumped.
And that's always the thing. If I remember correctly, on
the episode. The genetics since Abraham Lincoln. They go, well, it's clearly not Abraham Lincoln that this, so somebody pulls.
Yeah, and this is the thing. There was, I think on that episode of CSI, it turns out that it wasn't him. It was his dad or his twin. But at the end of the day, if I'm also in that family, this is a lose-lose for me because someone in my family is going away to prison. Right. My son, my husband, well, whoever.
Maybe you want them to.
That's
the thing. And a lot of people don't get along with their siblings.
There's a couple of other. Obviously,
Kim Jong-un like knocked off his sibling in that other country.
Oh, yeah. I saw it on TV. That was great, that one. They in the airport, and then he died.
Although the sister is apparently a great pal because she's hanging around at the Olympics.
Yeah, it's like The Sopranos, isn't it?
Everybody
the
really sister, likes her.
Yeah, big hit. Couple of other, if you want to reference any stuff, here's a couple of, if you don't do science, one of the greatest science fiction films about DNA and who we are is, of course, Gattaca with Ethan Hawke. We've mentioned CSI if you want to do some research. There's also a lot of B movies that might help you with this. The Body Parts with Jeff Fahey. Have you ever seen that one?
No.
I think he gets like a killer's arm and then he starts killing people. Reanimator. There's one with Michael Caine called The Hand, where he loses his hand and his hand is killing people on its own. And then there's something else. I think it was a TV show called Idle Hands.
All right.
Well, that's what happens when you get your DNA mixed up. You don't know where it's coming from.
I have another component.
That actually would be my defense if I'd got the DNA made me do it. That would be my defense.
Yeah. I got another component of the story that you should know about.
Hit me.
I hope you're going to.
All right.
Tyler Hamilton. Tyler Hamilton was accused of blood doping in the earlier mid 2000s.
No, it was, yeah, late. He was on Lance Armstrong. Tyler Hamilton, famous cyclist. He rode with Lance Armstrong.
Yeah, blood doping, by the way, is putting somebody else's red blood cells or just
no.
It can be any. It can be any.
Well,
cells. You're adding red blood cells to your body.
No.
What do you mean? No,
it's not someone else's.
I just interrupted myself. Stop saying no when I corrected myself. It's adding red blood cells to your body.
No, but adding your own.
It doesn't matter whether it's your own or somebody else's.
See, I always before we go down that road, that's obvious because I follow cycling. I've been a big critic of Lance Armstrong. One of the scams that was used by a lot of cyclists was you would take your blood from earlier, store it, and then stick it back in your body later when you were tired. Now, I know that's very much the quick Cliff Notes version of what's going on, but for whatever reason, by getting fresh blood and all that stuff, you were able to then go out the next day and dominate again. But I was always under the assumption it was your own blood.
See, it doesn't have to be. So now,
I didn't
let me tell the story. So this is from the New York Times, a reputable place from May 2005.
So hold on. Anyway, so but while you get that up, Tyler Hamilton was a famous cyclist. He rode with Lance Armstrong. Yep. He rode in the Tour de France. He was one of the first people to attempt to blow the whistle on Lance Armstrong. He got caught. Yep, it was me. And then he spilled the beans on all this sort of. He's so like one of the people who spilled the beans.
Was
the
spilling beans was after 2005?
I think so. Yes, he was on 60 Minutes. He went in front of is it WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency? You know, big witness for the.
Yeah.
Prosecution type person.
Last month, when the champion American cyclist Tyler Hamilton was accused of blood doping.
Actually, that's incorrect. It should be disgraced champion Tyler Hamilton because he's still, he admitted to
2005.
Oh, the article's from 2005.
Yeah,
so this is before they know he's a cheat. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Last month, when the champion American cyclist was accused of blood doping or transfusing himself with another person's blood to increase his oxygen carrying red cells, he offered a surprising defense. The small amount of different blood found mixed in with his own must have come from a vanishing twin. So I think this test, when they did the blood doping, it showed different genetics on the blood that was encouraging.
It's like, so, but it was his own blood.
No. That's the point. What he was actually accused of was they said, yeah, you have somebody else's blood in there. I mean, that's not all just your blood. He had somebody else's blood. And so his defense was, it is my blood. I have mixed genetics from having absorbed.
Oh, that was his defense. Clever.
And so therefore there's double genetics.
Yeah.
In other words, his scientific expert argued Mr. Hamilton had a twin that died in utero, but before dying contributed some of his blood cells to him during fetal life. Like in this one, it might not have been absorbed. It might have been just a swapping the blood. That's there's another term for that, which is less. It's less rare. It's not unusual when you do have twins to have the blood exchanged, and so you grow up with some of the genetics, but it hasn't influenced your development. It just means that you have blood cells that are from the other person.
It's like the skier. These actually are my skis, and they just look like someone else's.
Arbitration panel did not believe the hypothesis and said there was a negligible probability that Mr. Hamilton was anything but guilty. They concluded concluded in a 2-1 decision. It's not overwhelming there. Showed a blood transfusion meant that Mr. Hamilton was suspended for racing for 2 years. Blah, blah, blah. Mr. Hamilton said he will appeal the decision. Now, because of the fact that this is the actual 2005 article, I don't
have it's all completely out of date.
I don't have a follow up. Now, the article talks about whether Mr. Hamilton is guilty or innocent. His defense does refer to a real phenomenon.
Yes.
You know, they said this is actually possible to have two types of blood in your body without doping. Who knows if it's this case, but you can see why if somebody's pulling another blood, they might have said, oh, what it is. Now, the thing is with that, maybe at this point they didn't have the test. If it was a twin, then the genetics should line up, you know, enough. Like, even if it's a fraternal twin, you would be able to test the genetics and say it's related. Now, presumably, if you had this blood doping case, you could test the genetics in the second version of the blood that's in there and be like, well, this is just a stranger. You know, like, okay. At that point in 2005, I don't think you had that capacity. You could tell what was different, but you wouldn't be able to do with it. So I would have thought you already knew this story about Tyler.
I didn't. Well, no, because I didn't realize that was his defense. And because I followed all these guys, and because I've always presumed that everyone was guilty, again, I just knew. But then I'd always assumed that when cyclists cheated, there have been different variants of cyclist cheating, but the one with the blood cells was always. And I can't remember what would happen was, if I think correct, and I could be completely wrong here, when they were training, they would give blood and then they would.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I suspect, I bet you.
Something just got mixed up.
No. I bet you they didn't have the test at that point. Like when you first did it, you wouldn't bother storing your own blood. You could use other people's blood. You don't have to bother pulling blood out of yourself. You could just get blood from somewhere because at that point.
As long as it's the same blood type. Because how does
blood type,
this is what I'm saying. How does, and again, this is the interesting thing about this whole business of DNA in the. Because again, that's why we have different blood types, because I can't give someone my blood if I'm the different type.
Right.
But in a strange way, as long as the types match up.
Or it doesn't have to match. There's the universal donor and there's universal acceptor. Like if you're AB.
That's another good science.
I forget which direction it goes, but AB. There's AB and O. One of them can take anybody's blood, and the other one can give their blood to anybody. And it has just to do with the antibodies and things that are in there.
Talking of universal donor, have you ever seen Universal Soldier with John Vlankheim and Dolph Lundgren?
Yeah.
That's where they've been dead, and then they've been revived.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's all. It's all connected.
Have you been watching Altered Carbon on Netflix?
No, I haven't. We'll come back to that at some point.
That's a hard sci-fi thing. Anyway, so I bet you at that time they would basically be testing for extra red blood cells, but they wouldn't be testing the genetics of them. And so you would have no reason to use your own. And then in the wake of this, like Tyler Hamilton gets busted, I bet you that's the next wave of blood doping. You go, oh, I got a better way to do this. I'm going to pull my own blood, store it, throw it back in there.
Yes.
You know, like that's a reaction
That's what the scam ended up being.
Exactly, because that was the more finely tuned scam, so to speak.
Because they caught one team because apparently they were crossing the border and customs got on the bus and they found like bags of blood everywhere and everything. And that everyone on this team has been busted. And it's quite amazing, really. But again, if you're committing murder, I will do your research. If you're planning to commit murder, I would do your research here, because this could be your way out of it.
Yep.
And again, a famous episode of CSI when William Peterson was still on the show.
Yeah, real quick.
Original cast.
Quick additional tidbits, and we'll move on to our next pseudoscience-type topic. In the animal kingdom, there's lots of different versions of these. Apparently, marmosets are almost all chimeras. Like, just really? The way they're born, they're
they look a bit, they have those big eyes and everything, like, don't they? All look a bit freaky.
And they talk about the fact that technically all of us at some degree are chimeras, in the sense that whenever your genetic code replicates, there's always mutations. I mean, cancer is a mutation of your own, of not of your own genetic, but of a genetic code in there. So as soon as you have any different strains of genetics running through your body, at some level, you've got a chimera. Now your body's supposed to react against those and do things, but obviously,
yeah. I mean, here's the issue with DNA. If you do break it, and this is as a part of me now, because again, if the title of the show is "We're Screwing Up Science," then I have to say something moronic about it. If you keep cutting these things down to that subatomic level,
right,
or you can push it around and make the, you can make a pattern out of whatever, can't you?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of the thing about it.
There could be a scale. And then my favorite one is about the symbiotic chimerism in anglerfish, ceratioid, well, just an angler, a type of anglerfish. And so I've seen stuff about these fish, but it's the way they mate. The male bites the female fish and has something in their saliva that basically dissolves cells in his mouth and in the skin and attaches to the female fish permanently. Like, eventually they have a fully integrated blood system and the like, and eventually the male part of that just dies, and that's how, like, they mate with the fish. But as a result, the resulting female fish has mixed genetics of the two fishes.
Oh. It gives a whole new meaning to oral sex. And of course, it's the plot of Jurassic Park. It's the key part of Jurassic Park.
They don't have two genetics.
They
make a different genetic code by filling the blanks with another animal.
Yes,
and given animal only has this one set of genetics.
Yeah, but that's the whole catch of the thing. My point is, and it will not make clear in the movie, but in the book, right? In the book, the dinosaurs are mating. The dinosaurs are reproducing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the people who've made the dinosaurs are like, yeah, they can't. We've designed them that way with the DNA.
Right.
And then the Sam Neill character from the movie, so the Alan, whatever the character is in the book, the dinosaur archaeologist guy, he discovers that when they'd filled out the blanks in creating the dinosaurs,
in the movie too, like frog.
Yeah, but it was just sort of skated over, because really the movie's just about watching some dinosaurs lumber about and eat people. They'd used African toad DNA and they'd stuck it in there, but of course these African mud toads or whatever they are, they're, what do you call it when
they're they can switch genders?
They can switch genders, and so therefore the dinosaurs had, with that DNA,
right,
had found a way to beat the system.
Yeah.
So basically, at a DNA level, the moral of the story is here: if you can manipulate DNA, you can beat the system.
Yes, but those animals weren't chimeras. Because
made a dinosaur, but it was really a dinosaur toad.
But the definition of a chimera is it has two different sets of DNA in it. In the movie, they create one set of DNA that gives you the dinosaur
I'll give you that.
Yeah. Get you on a technicality.
Right. Well, no, that's fine.
All right, I think that's it for the topic. I think I covered all my little bits and pieces.
All right.
The next thing, which
some
is
some serious science in there, let me tell you that exactly. For free.
AV screws up science.
Yeah.
This one is sort of science-y, I guess, because it's technology.
It's actually technology,
yeah. Boston Dynamics is a company up in the New England area.
We have covered them many years ago. If you go back to, I think, March or April of 2013, one of our earlier shows, we actually covered they'd invented the robot animal.
Well,
so it was a four-legged animal that they designed it for military use. So it was like a pack animal in that it could carry stuff.
Yeah, like the ideas. It looked like a large dog.
Like a large dog.
It, you know, not like they gave it fur or anything like that. The way it moved, like its legs were designed.
Four-legged animal.
So it could get across any sort of terrain. And the theory was you could laden it down with a bunch of packs. It'd be like, maybe it'd be more like a burro, but it was acting more like a dog.
We'd link the article and the video, and we'd spend a whole episode discussing about how lifelike they were, yeah. and
there's,
how
there's
how
a
would
scene,
that create?
There's a scene where like somebody is kicking it to show the balance.
Yeah,
like because it like stumbles and it rights itself up immediately. It doesn't even fall, but it's hard to like not immediately just because it had four legs and moved a little like a
you
dog.
You did have a sentimental
like
it felt
like
a reaction.
Poor robot, you know, poor robot, kind of thing. Yeah. And this is where we talked about how the robots are going to get us because they figured, well, here's another way the robots are going to get us because they just recently came out with a version. It's this robot seems to be their stock robot now in this area.
Yeah, four legged
called
thing.
A Spot Mini. So it's smaller than the other one, but they've now there's a video scene. This is
of it. Pulling.
Oh, I never got around to giving crap to the Guardian, but this is on the Guardian also.
They show
they
an opening
that's
a
little, well, but it's a whole scene, right? Like
yes.
So the one robot comes up to a door, it tilts back and looks, I mean, it doesn't have a face, but it like kind of tilts as if like it's pointing out towards the door, then looks off in a corner. Another robot comes around that looks very much like it, except it has this big grappling hook where its head would be.
Right.
It comes around, goes over to the door, like gauges itself the door. It's kind of interesting, like the claw is there, but the body moves, and it's one of those things where you can tell, like, the gyroscopes or whatever else balance it, like, because the claw is not moving while the body moves forward at one point, and then comes and grabs it, opens the door, pries the claw around the door like we would, like if you're holding us, because it's a spring-loaded door,
right?
Holds it open, like sticks its foot in there, and like
that was the thing that got me, it sticks its foot in there that we stick our foot in the door to keep
pulls it the whole way, and like holds it aside, lets the other robot walk through, and then it follows it through.
Yeah.
And of course, like all the articles are talking about, like maybe not so much the article in the Guardian, but if you go to some other websites where they're being more humorous about it, they're like, terrifying, right? Like the robots are now can open doors and come through there and all this stuff. My worry is that it's going to teach the dogs how to open the doors, but that'd be a whole nother story.
I don't know. Then the dog could walk itself. Yeah, I mean, really.
It'd be convenient. But then
you don't have a dog, so you're not getting up at 6 in the morning to let it out.
So, you know, interesting enough thing in and of itself. I don't know. But before we talk about like the next level of discussing this, anything else about like the mechanics of that are worth noting?
No, but I remember when I watched the video, and again, this is all, we have discussed this many times before. The manufacturers, I don't want to use the word con, but we always have it in our mind that the robot is going to do something in a very robotic fashion, yet they have found their gimmick is to make the robot act in a very human fashion. Like, again, to me, when I watched that video, it opens the door and then it sticks its foot in there to hold the door open.
Yeah,
that's a very human thing. And you sit there and all of a sudden, when you just see something behave that way, within your mind, you start thinking differently about what you are watching because it seems human. Yeah. And I think that's the one thing that Boston Dynamics have consistently done with their products is they're not making robots. They're making robots that act in a very human/animal way. Now, if you go online and you look at like, funnily enough, I think there was an article on Deadspin that the Japanese probably had brought a whole load of robotic ice skaters to the Olympics and we're putting them out there and things. And it didn't really look, it just looks like machinery. The Boston Dynamics products, they echo human/animal behavior in how they move. And so right at that moment, as a person, you evaluate them differently.
Yeah. Well,
you can't help it. Your subconscious reacts to them differently.
And that's
always been our point.
And I'm gonna speculate about what's going on with this scene, but that may make perfect sense, right? Because the thing is, the reason that these various adaptive machines would seem like animals is because animals figured out how to do things and people figured out how to do things. So, like, the fact that you put a foot in the door, it doesn't have to be that you're trying to play on our sense of humanism or sympathy for it. It can be that is the logical way to deal with the door, right? Like, you know, in other words, we evolved with hands and doorknobs and things
and
to
correct.
Do this stuff. And so, like, it makes sense to be like, well, if I'm going to make a machine, why don't I do what evolution has created, like, in the way of a hand, like a five-fingered hand? That
you've said so much
things.
Better what I was trying to say, that traditionally, I think people have built robots to do a task. You do get a sense with Boston Dynamics that they've built robots to replicate
well, because that's
movement
the best
and behavior,
way to do it. Right?
And then at that moment, apply that to the task.
Right, because it's the best, and that's probably the best way to do the task. Now, that said, this leads into the next part, which is, I think some of the scene is baloney, because in theory, like, it's one thing to have these robots go through.
You're saying it is fixed. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. Nice. Because so the real scary thing would be literally if they had enough programming in these robots that they just put them in a room and say, go through door. And it does all these steps to go through the door and the like that communicates between the two and blah, blah, blah. But I don't believe that's what's really happening here for a couple of reasons. They have the animal, the first one, come up and like tilt and look at the doorknob. There's no reason for that to happen. It isn't like the first animal has no grappling hook. It doesn't matter whether the door is a wall or it has a handle. And I guarantee you that the cameras and sensors that are on this don't require the thing to tilt back in this very animal-like way to look at the handle. I could have saw the handle like just by a camera that goes 360 degrees. Then the fact that it like looks over in the other corner and the other animal comes from behind the little wall and then does all this stuff, all those parts make me think it was all pre-programmed to do a bunch of these things. I'm sure that the opening of the door is a set of steps that it's been taught to
do. What you're saying is...
But it isn't like... It's more like a bunch of scripted to give you this fun version.
They've built a machine that does a specific task rather than a robot that figures it out and does it.
Is
that what you're saying?
I think it's designed...
I actually do agree with you. I do think
I think the video is done in a way so that it has a bunch of surrounding pieces. Right.
So it makes
if you put the one robot and you said, okay, there's a door, go there, and you don't have to like script out the steps because it has been designed to figure out these kind of mechanics.
Basically,
a whole other parts, all the little parts about
that's
it,
true, yeah.
Holding the door aside for the other animal and all that. You know, like it's all little. I don't even know. Do they even have a network between them of communication? It's not like they bark at each other.
Well, also, is there coding within the machine that, oh, if you get to a revolving door, you don't have to do any of these things? Or what would happen if it was a push open door and not a pull open door? Would it know that? Yeah.
It's a little bit calculated, which really leads to the next point we were going to talk about, which is really maybe the most interesting part of that is that
you have to read the article when we link it.
I think it's a marketing piece. Well, I guess it's always a marketing piece at some level, but adding all those extra pieces in is because this company's got a problem. And that is nobody seems to quite have figured out what they can do with it, whether it's worth the money and it doesn't work. So, for example, that first one, it was always...
Which is 4 or 5 years ago now. We started talking about it in 2013.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I remember the show.
So, that company had been just acquired by Google as Alphabet Ultimate. But it's the Google company had acquired it. One of the Google founders was the big one who was into this thing. That person left Google, and suddenly this company was left with more, and that company's now been sold, and it's a subsidiary of SoftBank, which is a big Japanese company buying up a bunch of different businesses totally unrelated to this. But apparently, if you read the article, and this is where we said the interesting part of this article, which we'll link, talks all about the history of that, like where there was strife in the company and the like. Apparently, what had happened is that big animal where they thought, okay, it's going to have these applications. They had marketed it to Marines or some other military branch, and it turned out it was too loud. And the problem was, this is great that you've got this thing, but I can't go walking through trying to sneak up on something that's going on when there's this machine next to me going, zip, 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 zip.
Also, I don't think it works probably. And I don't mean that in the sense it doesn't work. What I mean is, there is a sense with what... The product doesn't actually do what you think it does on the box, which is our point here, is these products are all doing something, but right now there's no applicable use for it because people are looking for a product that can figure it out as it goes along.
Yeah.
These products are designed to do a certain thing.
Right. If you had a version of that just carried your stuff and it could just autonomously follow you, it doesn't really have to figure it out how to do much.
Right. And these ones don't do that. Everything has to be pre-programmed.
Oh, no, but I mean, even that, like, so, like, you know, the robotic cars, and, like, I guarantee you, like, that thing was programmed enough where you could put it a GPS coordinate here, a GPS coordinate there, and you'd say, walk between those two, and it's got enough of motor skills and the like to get through a rocky field.
Sure.
You don't have to program anything more than go from here to there. So that could be a perfect use for it
but they haven't mastered the shortcuts yet. I've got to spend all that time programming the thing. I might as well just carry the stuff myself and get there in half the time. That's sort of the point.
I think they're far enough on that. I don't think. They have these wheelchairs now that can walk upstairs.
Okay,
it doesn't require a big thing to it. It's all part of the Segway setup.
Okay,
all right. Anyway, but in any event, they clearly don't have quite a home on this stuff, and so I think they're trying to figure it out, which kind of leads into the next drone robot right. related story. The sorry, I'm leaning over. The Post had an article, Washington Post again. This is back in November. I had it sitting on my shelf, and I'm excited now to be able to throw this away because I had a paper version of it. Talking about drones in warfare, meaning not the dog types, but the type we know about.
Flying drones, yeah.
You know, like, everybody knows what the improvised explosive devices are, IEDs, so these roadside bombs that people put together with a pipe and some nails and, like, wires and things like that. So the next wave that's been going on is, I don't think it's fully fleshed out yet, but they're seeing some of it is commercial drones, meaning like drones that we could buy, you know, little ones, medium-sized ones that you could buy just for toy purposes, being repurposed into being improvised explosive devices. So it could deliver a bomb into a military base just by flying over there and landing.
Yeah, I mean, like all the ones that you see covering sports events on TV and in the movies, a lot of those great shots. You can always, it's funny now, I watch enough movies and TV now that I can instantly see a shot and go, yeah, they did a drone. It's drone, not helicopter.
I'm trying to figure out, in the downhill skiing, they've had some shots that I thought were drones initially, but I think they might be a big, high overhead wire because they're so replicated. Now, of course, the drones can be programmed to go the exact the same way, but with the winds and stuff like that,
I think those are wire
shots. But really, it's pretty cool. It looks like a drone. It seems like it's a drone shot, but I think it's way up on a wire.
Because the ones that they use at the NFL games are still wire.
Yeah. Yeah, because you don't, I guess at some level, you don't need a drone, right? If you you throw a couple of wires up there, it's a lot cheaper. You can control it.
Oh, consistency of shot.
Not a problem that's like dropping on people's heads.
Yeah.
So, you know, these drones are being used. So the military is trying to figure out what to do with it. And the article's title is by Christian Davenport, Frying, F-R-Y-I-N-G, drones with lasers and microwaves.
Yeah.
And so now the military, the commercial companies, Raytheon is mentioned in here, are all talking about developing these weapons to disarm these drones or knock them down. So I forget the first one I said, but here it says something at first, but then it says Raytheon's taking a different approach, mounting a high energy laser weapon on top of a militarized dune buggy that basically shoots lasers at them and knocks them out of the sky. Somebody else, Lockheed Martin, has a laser also. CACI, a defense contractor around here, has a microwave cannon, I think. Or no, wait, this is radio technology. Somewhere in here, they've got one with a microwave cannon, they call it.
Yeah.
And all these things are designed. You'd point them at, or maybe they'd be automated at the drone coming in, and it would zap the electronics in the drone and knock it out of the sky.
Yeah. It's BS.
Well, it's not that it's BS that it can work.
Well, no.
Like, that could work. But the point is, don't we have guns?
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't want to steal what you were saying before him.
We've said before. I mean, there are famous stories, isn't there, of the real life where someone has been bothered by his neighbor's drone flying around the neighborhood with a camera trying to take pictures of him sunbathing. And he's gone back in the house and got a shotgun out and blasted the thing out of the sky.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly how you defend against drones is with the technology that you already have.
Right. Like, so, and it's not like we don't have automated guns already. I mean,
those
military gunships with their Aegis things are all designed for the guns to
fire
quickly pivot around and fire missiles.
Missiles.
So why do we need a special? Now, the only advantage I can see is in close quarters, shooting a microwave cannon means you're not spraying bullets across the town.
Okay.
You know, so maybe there's something there, but it does seem to me that we could adapt some easier technology, which all just leads into the thing of,
the military industrial complex.
As President Eisenhower warned on his way out the door. Is that what
he called them? That's what he called
it. On his departing address or close to departing address, he warned it. Although, like, a bunch of people have said
that I've only seen that in the film.
He wasn't JFK. Warning about it in the sense of, like, we think about now about, too much militarization. He was really warning about it as a corruptive influence, that, like, these two parts between the military and the commercial were, like, kind of feeding off of each other and there's corruption. He wasn't saying, like, oh, we should all not do the military. He was just saying, watch out, this is usurping our democracy.
Really? Because in it, well, but, I mean, it wasn't like
Eisenhower was, like, a big peace lover, you know?
No, that's true. I mean, but it is kind of... it's all a bit self-serving, isn't it? The point we've just made is, if we've already got stuff that can shoot stuff down, is there any need for Raytheon to make something that's going to make them a whole load of money? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's all slightly.
Well, you know, people get excited. I mean, it's, you know, like, it's cool, it's sci-fi, but you do wonder whether, couldn't we just, instead of having the laser on the back of a dune buggy, which implies, by the way, that you have somebody manning it to shoot this laser at things, couldn't we just have something that can shoot off rounds or can shoot off whatever weapons? And it's not even like it has to be that strong, right? Because assuming we're dealing with relatively small things, you're not shooting a jet fighter out of the sky. You're shooting a 3-foot-wide drone out of the sky. And why can't you take that out with some sort of automated technology that, like, can track it with radar and the like, and knock it down?
So. It actually really does show you the difference between Arnold the Terminator and then the T2 Terminator in T2. In the Arnold the Terminator is the technology, but he's useless without, like, a shotgun. Whereas the other one just turns into a weapon.
He can squish things, but he can't.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. So, like, so we've sent the crap Terminator to defend John Connor? Yeah. We should have sent the good Terminator, like the top one.
It would kind of ruin the plot of the movie if the Terminator just
won. It would have ruined the plot of the movie, but it would have just been just better tactical decisions all the way around. Exactly. So.
Well, that's the case in a lot of movies. You need to have a bad tactical decision in order to make suspense work out there.
Have you ever, talking of DNA, have you ever seen Gattaca with Ethan Hawke?
Yeah, a bunch of times.
Yeah, good movie. Very good movie. DNA. Anything else? We've completely made a hash of science this week.
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't think so. That's it for this time around.
But again, if you weren't sure, go back and re-listen. If you're planning on cheating in a bicycle race, here's the way to do it.
Like, yeah, exactly. Save your own blood.
Save your own blood. This has been the Lightning Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.